despite the strange decorations of skins, bones, hides, antlers, and feathers that decorated all of them. The fires emanated from large basins that had been set at the compass points around the village. There was a central area between the homes, with what appeared to be some sort of shrine or religious stage. A black-clad figure appeared in the headlights and waved as we approached. I recognized Skippy from his gait. Other figures appeared from the homes, all of them shorter than average, and several squat ones that must have been children. Many of them were hurriedly pulling on their masks or hoods. I parked the car next to some older model pickup trucks. Before I had even shut the engine off, Gretchen had bailed out of the vehicle and went running toward her husband. He picked her up and swung her around as they joyfully embraced. Several of the others joined them in a massive group hug. I stepped out of the car. The air smelled of delicious, roasting meat. The sounds that I first thought were angry noises were actually laughter coming from the reunited tribe. Some of the children began to play a game, running and chasing after each other. Skippy left the group when he saw me. Many of them studied us curiously from behind their tinted goggles or mirrored shades.
"Noble one, thank you, bringing Gretchen home."
He bowed down until his balaclava touched the ground. I bowed back. "Thank you, Skippy. Gretchen saved our lives tonight. She healed our many wounds, and her faith and bravery turned away a master vampire. If it wasn't for her, many hunters would have died."
"She brings honor to clan?"
He rose and spoke loudly in his language. There were some gasps of astonishment as they stepped away from Gretchen and then bowed to her. I could not see her features, but by her mannerisms I was guessing that she was slightly embarrassed by the display. After a few seconds they rose and went back to their merry greetings. Finally, Gretchen was able to break away and approach us, the rest of the tribe following closely behind her, until finally the whole group was assembled quietly in front of the three of us. Gretchen pointed at Trip and said something to the others. There was much oohing and eyeing, and then they bowed toward him. Skippy's people were big on the bowing.
What's going on?"
he asked, running one hand through his dreads nervously.
"Dark Hunter, you fought government agents to protect Gretchen?"
When he said government, the tribe booed.
"I guess," he answered.
"Agents beat you,"
he pointed at Tripp's face.
"For protect her?"
"Yes, really, it was no big deal.
Skippy cut him off. He turned back to the tribe and loudly proclaimed,
"Snoozle! Snoozle, I!"
Then to us,
"Darkskin Hunter, brother of war chief and girl, bring great honor. My clan, you won with us, with honor. No need for hide."
Skippy reached up and removed his glasses, revealing bright yellow eyes sunk deep into grayish-green tissue. He carefully folded and put the shades in a pocket and began to remove his balaclava. One by one, the others did so as well. Even the little children removed their hoods, some needing the help of their mothers. We had gained the trust and respect of the tribe. Honoring us as equals, they revealed their true selves. Their skin was bumpy, mottled, mostly green, some gray, and some brown. They were either bald or some with wispy white hair. Their lower jaws protruded, and tusk-like teeth stuck past their lips. Most of their noses were squat, though some were raised up more like snouts. The eyes were yellow or pale blue, set under thick bone ridges and short foreheads. Their ears were long and pointy, and most, if not all of them, had facial piercings of bone or gold.
"Holy shit," Holly mumbled. "Orcs," Tripp said in awe. "I don't believe it."
Skippy's pointed teeth ground together above his wide jaw in what I believed was a smile. His yellow eyes twinkled as he clapped his hands above his head.
"Orcs, yes, clan of Nurlvis, feast of North, spear of Doom, now clan of MHI, Harbanger, give us home, give us work, now our family, join us, eat meat, dance."
He pointed at one of the others, who immediately turned and ran for what I thought was a shrine. The younger orc knelt and fiddled with something on the backside of the edifice, and massive hidden speakers started blaring. Metal. The orcs were playing heavy metal.
"JBL! Kick ass, sound system!"
Skippy grunted at us.
"Come! Party!"
The entire tribe began to either bang their heads, dance wildly, or jump up and down with their hands extended above their heads, pointer and pinky fingers extended in the devil horns of classic rock. The children formed a mosh pit and began to slam each other about. The mothers looked on approvingly.
"Skippy, I wish that we could,"
I shouted over the sounds of Static X.
"But we have a mission. We need to fly to Natchi Bottom in the morning."
The orcs danced. Giant wolves howled in the nearby forest. Of course, that explained the thing that had crossed the headlights. You can't have orcs without wargs. Skippy nodded.
"Skip, understand. I be there. Together. Crush foes. Must take care of clan. Then come to fly into battle."
He bowed again. I returned the honor.
"Thank you, noble one."
"Great honor, Skippy. Thank you." We parted. I returned to the car. Holly climbed into the front seat. Tripp stood transfixed at the rear door, staring at the clan in wonder as some of the giant wolves wandered out of the tree line and into the light of the fires. Little green children ran to crawl up on the horse-sized animals, playing with what to them were basically family pets. Pets with jaws that could snap a deer in half, but pets nonetheless. Skippy returned to Gretchen, and they knocked their tusks together in what was probably the orcish equivalent of a kiss. I started the car. Finally, Tripp broke away from the sights and got in. We drove down the lane. The raucous music died away as the distance increased. We did not speak. Tripp stared out the window in silence. The Mercedes bumped and scraped as we bottomed out. It would take a pretty dedicated explorer to bother with this back road, and now I could see that that was by design. It was a strange and secret community, but obviously one built upon strong family bonds of love. My spirits were lifted from my brief visit to Skippy's people. Finally, Holly spoke.
"Well, Tripp, satisfied now?" "Huh? Remember when we met the elves?"
He did not answer, but none of us could forget his disappointment on that day.
"Remember when you said that since there was so much secret evil, there had to be some sort of secret good to balance it out?"
"Yeah," he answered slowly. I could not see him in the darkened car, but from his voice I could tell he was smiling. I guess there is. I guess there really is. See? I told you so, Holly said, in smug satisfaction. We assembled in the meeting room. Harbinger was preparing to brief us. We would be taking off within the next half hour. It was 4 a.m. Every available hunter was assembled, including the untested newbies, all of Harbinger's team, Dorcas, and the senior Shackelford. The conference room was crowded. Every other member of MHI in the country was currently en route. I sat down at the conference table next to Milo. He grinned when he saw me. The man was always in a good mood.
So did you get to meet Skippy's people?
Orcs, I answered. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, they're good folks. Homo Ogrillion. We were hired to go into Uzbekistan and eradicate them. Turned out that they weren't so evil after all, so we brought them all home. I'm glad we did.
Harbinger called the briefing to order. It took a few minutes for the group to quiet down. Apparently, word of the attack and all the gory details had spread quickly. Julie was sitting next to her grandfather, and his burned face was drawn into a tight grimace of pain and anger. I could not imagine how the man felt. Even if you had distanced yourself from a child who committed horrible crimes, he was still your child. And now he had lost that son. Harbinger cut right to the chase.
Everybody knows about what's going on. You've already heard about what happened earlier tonight. One former hunter is dead. One current hunter is missing. Turns out that one of our own is a master vampire in the service of the Cursed One. We have a deal with the feds. One team is going to go with them to Natchy Bottom to deal with the main bad guys. Every available hunter is on the way. As they arrive, the rest of us will break into groups and handle the following undead outbreaks.
He pointed at the map of the southeast that had been taped to the wall. It was dotted with red tacks.
Auburn, Gadsden, and Forestdale, Alabama. Columbus, Georgia. Pulaski, Tennessee. And Pensacola, Florida. Those are all confirmed vampires or whites. Boone's team just cleared out some new creations in Atlanta. I felt bad calling them up since some of his men are still hurting from the freighter, but they rose to the occasion. And we have unconfirmed reports in Florence, Tupelo, Dothan, Fayetteville, Russellville, and Demopolis, though those might just be regular missing persons, but I wouldn't bet on it.
He paused long enough to take a drag off his cigarette. I had not seen him smoke indoors around the other hunters before, but I was guessing that he was under more stress than normal.
As other teams arrive, they will be diverted to those trouble spots. This is our turf, so local law enforcement knows us and is helping out. National Guard, same thing. Mostly they can be used as perimeter security, but if you think you can trust them, press them into service as well. We don't have time to screw around, so if you find where the vamps are sleeping, just blow it straight to hell. We don't have time to stake and chop and all that. If they're in a mine, collapse it. If they're in a building, burn it down. If you need to, borrow a tank from the National Guard. If they're inside something that you can't justify blowing up, then do what you have to do.
How many threats are we talking about?
Sam asked.
Potentially hundreds.
There was some murmuring and swearing at that, from everybody except the untested newbies who had not yet seen a real undead.
We always thought that vampires were limited in the number of new creations they could make. That was always our theory on how come they didn't just bite everybody and overrun us. Looks like we were wrong, at least when it comes to masters. We're looking at a few different threats here, so let me break it down. Somehow, the CO is able to bring people back as whites. Then we have two kinds of vamps, the regular new creations, where somebody is just killed and comes back as one, and apparently a stronger, smarter type, made by biting the victim and then giving them some of the master vampire's own blood and power.
Like Darnay? I asked.
The former French hunter had been amazingly fast and seemed to be in full control of his faculties, unlike the more animalistic creatures that had been the other vampires.
Most likely. So we're talking about some serious badasses. Plus, we know that he can animate gargoyles as well, though there have not been any sightings of those since the ones that Pitt and Julie killed. Nobody knows how long it takes to create one of those, or even how many he brought over to start with.
What do we have?
Milo asked.
Counting us and the newbies, we have about 12 teams of hunters. 6 people in the hospital are on medical leave. 70 total personnel available, Julie answered.
71,
her grandfather said from the head of the table. He pulled a well-oiled S&W 1917 from under his sweater and put it on the table with a clunk.
I ain't sitting this one out.
But Grandpa,
Julie said.
Who ever thought I would get to live this long anyway, kid? This old man is looking for a fight. These bastards killed my boy, even if he was a crazy son of a bitch himself. Monsters don't get to kill a Shackleford and get away with it. It sets bad precedent.
72,
Dorcas added, her grandmotherly looks not quite matching the steel in her voice.
Try to stop me, you'll be tasting my plastic foot. I can still run a machine gun with the best of them.
We help,
said a gravelly voice from the doorway. I had not heard Skippy approach.
10 warriors, 5 who heal, ride to battle, slay many foes.
Skippy, you don't have to. Your people are so few in number as it is,
Harbinger said.
Harbinger, deny us honor of battle?
Skippy asked. His voice sounded extra distorted through his flight helmet's face shield.
No, of course not.
The director bowed his head.
My clan thanks you for your brave warriors.
87 total staff, then, Julie said. Against probably double that number of powerful undead and who knows what spread from one corner of the south to the other.
88,
said the voice of the old man in my head. I wished he would stop doing that. It freaked me out. I may have a weird job, but that doesn't mean that I liked hearing voices in my head.
Who's going to Natchee Bottom?
Sam asked.
Feds are going to be the one doing all the fighting, and we can let them be the muscle. So we'll just take the hind. Skippy flies, of course, and one can ride co-pilot. Then we can fit 8 plus gear.
I'm going, Julie said.
No, you're injured, and I need you here to coordinate the arriving teams.
Bullshit,
she snapped.
This is personal.
I know, and that's why you ain't going, Harbinger stated.
Wrong. I'm on that helicopter, or you can have my resignation right now, and I'll drive up there myself.
Julie stood up from the table.
Don't push me, Earl. She's going to be there, and she isn't going to rest until she gets me, too.
Harbinger slowly nodded, his cigarette dangling from his lips.
Fine, he said. Julie, Sam, Milo, so my whole team. Pitt? He knows the bad guys better than anybody. That leaves 4 volunteers. Keep in mind, this is probably going to be real dangerous. Most likely all 7 of the Masters, plus whatever powers that the Cursed One himself has.
I'm going,
Tripp said, surprising no one.
You feel up to it?
What, this?
He pointed at his battered face.
Just a scratch. I'm in. Holly stated. Any excuse to kill something.
Me too,
Albert Lee offered.
Nope, your ribs are still jacked up. No offense, Lee, but if anything, you're going to run support for a local team. Sorry. 2 more.
He pointed at Dorcas.
Oh, hell no. Don't even think about it. If Julie's going, I definitely need you here to coordinate. Once that's done, then you can go get yourself killed all you want.
The older woman slowly lowered her hand. Lee raised his hand again.
Mr. Harbinger, sir, I can do it. I feel a lot better. I won't slow us down, plus I've been doing nothing but studying the archives for the last week. Maybe something I learned can help.
You had to admire our demolitionist librarian. It took some guts to stand up to Harbinger's overwhelming presence.
It wasn't even a real break, just a minor fracture. And Gretchen gave me some stuff, said that I'm good to go.
Harbinger scowled and thought about it for a moment. Finally, you're on.
I could go,
stated Julie's grandfather. She gasped. But I'm afraid I would just slow you down. There were a few relieved sighs at that. I could not imagine that Harbinger could order around the president of the company.
Brother, Skippy said. Exist. Edward. Ed. Great warrior. Much honor clan to go.
The dude with the swords? Milo asked. He mimicked swinging swords around his head.
Yes. Ed with swords. He go too. Hell yeah, Sam said. He's one bad dude.
That's a full chopper, Harbinger said. He glanced down at his watch. Hurley's team is due to hit Pensacola shortly. Boone's en route to Gadsden. Scramble the others as needed. Boss, Dorcas, shuffle the newbies off to any teams that are short-handed. It's all yours. This is it. For you newbies who have not fought yet, don't worry. You've been trained. You know what to do. Stick with your team leads and do what they tell you. You'll be fine. Now let's get to work. The world is counting on us.
Good luck, everyone, Julie said. You know what to do.
I taught you guys how to fight. Don't screw up, Sam ordered the newbies.
Everyone stood up from the table and began to disperse. He shouted one last set of instructions for his parting charges.
And if the going gets tough and you get the urge to quit, just remember that we get paid real good for this shit.
We finish this today, Harbinger stated to no one in particular. I hoped so. It was Thursday morning. Friday night was the full moon and the end of the world. I wondered if I would be alive to see it. I waited for Julie in the hallway, standing nervously in front of the wall of memorial plaques. A bright new one had been set on the wall for Jerry Roberts. I was wearing my full armor, festooned with weapons and ammunition. I was ready for war. But I was not ready for what I needed to do next. Julie strode down the hall, also fully armed for battle. Her M14 was slung over one shoulder, and a row of sharpened stakes was lashed to her webbing. Her long hair had been tied up beneath her hockey helmet, and she had replaced her glasses with shatterproof prescription goggles. She was angry and determined, and no vampires or cursed conquistadors were going to stand in her way. She saw me and attempted to smile. She failed miserably.
Hey, Owen. Look, I'm sorry you had to see me freak out back there at the house, and I'm sorry I snapped at you. That was just a lot of emotion for me, you know? Grant's probably dead, or worse. Dad is dead, and I didn't think that I would mind that, but I do. And Mom?
She shrugged. I know, I said simply. If Grant's alive, we'll find him. And I'll help you deal with Susan. She changed the subject.
How are your ribs? Frank beat the hell out of you.
Fine, I lied. It hurt to move. Plus, I had huge bruises on my neck from her mother. How's your shoulder?
Fine,
she lied. I grinned. That got her to smile. Look, Julie, I just want to say, you know, in case I don't make it.
I know,
she answered sheepishly.
Don't talk like that.
I reached down and touched her hand. I very gradually took it into my own. I... She squeezed back.
I know. I really do. But I can't deal with that right now. Too much other stuff going on. Besides, we're going to live through this, right?
I looked down. I was not so sure. The others had not felt the power of the Cursed One like I had. They did not really understand the evil that he contained. I had a bad feeling that we were not going to win. She leaned in close and kissed me on the cheek.
Thanks,
she said. My heart skipped a beat. Okay, I said. Not being a very eloquent man, that was the best that I could manage. She must have realized what she had done, but she did not move away. Instead, she came a little closer. We stayed like that for a few seconds, neither of us knowing what to say.
See that?
She nodded at the sign above the memorial wall.
Do you know Latin?
No. I had seen the plaque my first day here, but I had not understood what it meant.
Sic transit gloria mundi,
she explained.
When Caesar would address his people, in all his glory, in his splendor with his armies and his riches, there would always be a functionary standing by his side, whispering that saying in his ear. It's a reminder. It means, the glory of man is fleeting. Do you know why we have that carved here?
Because we can get killed any time, I answered. It keeps us humble.
Pretty much.
That's a hell of a philosophy.
It really is. It means that all of our glory, all of the good we accomplish, we had better enjoy them now, because we are one heartbeat away from losing it. We live fast, and we usually die young. But it sure is glorious while it lasts. Monster hunters don't have time to waste.
What are you trying to say?
You're not real bright for a genius, are you?
Julie stood close to me, armor against armor. She turned her head slightly and closed her eyes.
Shut up and kiss me.
I did. It was glorious. I took her in my arms, weapons clanking into each other. Time ceased to exist. The whole universe consisted of just her and me. Life was good. The kiss seemed to last forever.
Ahem.
I was jolted away from her soft lips.
Time to go, kids,
Harbinger stated as he walked past us.
Helicopter is prepped. Feds are already en route.
Yes, sir,
I shouted, very embarrassed.
Be right there, Earl,
Julie said, looking flushed. She waited for him to disappear.
I need to sit down.
I don't want to feel like I'm taking advantage of you with all the stuff going on and your parents and Grant and... I stammered. She kissed me again, quicker this time.
This isn't about any of them. Don't talk about it. We had better get out of here.
Sure. I didn't want to let go of her.
Go. I've got to grab something. I'll be right there.
We parted. She smiled. I grinned like an idiot. I walked away, looking back over my shoulder the whole time. She did the same. I finally had to quit when I walked painfully into the drinking fountain. I waved stupidly. She disappeared around the corner. I started to run. It turned into a sprint. I could not help myself. I passed Harbinger through the double doors, ran the few hundred yards to the runway without slowing, vaulted through the open door of the hind, and took a seat. Milo and Sam were sitting across from me, already strapped in. I gave them a big thumbs up.
Let's kill us some monsters!
I shouted over the already turning rotors. The two seasoned hunters just looked at each other and shrugged. The distant sky in the east was beginning to turn orange. Dawn would be here soon. It was going to be a great day. I could tell. Chapter 21 We lifted off from the compound and headed northwest at over 120 miles an hour. Even at that speed, we had about 2 hours of flight time. I sat next to Julie. She had winked at me when she had strapped in, but did not say anything that the others could hear. Harbinger studied us stonily, but after a few minutes of uneventful flight, he used the opportunity to get some sleep. Trip and Holly stared out of opposite windows, apparently lost in thought. Milo and Sam argued about what Sam's new team logo should be, either a frog or a walrus. Either way, it was going to have a cowboy hat. Lee read a book until he became violently airsick, then he too went to sleep. Skippy left the music off of the intercom, probably in deference to the early morning hour, not that the internal engine noises of the chopper weren't already deafeningly loud. His brother Ed took the co-pilot seat. He was dressed like a ninja, except for the tinted Bolle goggles. When nobody was looking, Julie reached over and took my hand. She held it for most of the flight. I did not know if she felt the same way about me as I felt about her. Looking at it logically, she barely knew me, and in the last 24 hours her world had been turned upside down. Was this sudden affection for me the result of feelings that she already held, or were they instead caused by her need to have some sort of anchor? Either way, I was fine. I could deal with being an anchor. I was certainly heavy enough. Screw logic. It had no place in relationships anyway. I just enjoyed holding her hand. The rhythmic strumming of the helicopter made me tired. I could understand why, since I had only had a few hours of sleep that night. And it had been a stressful night, to say the least. Check that. It had been a stressful week. On Saturday, I had been drowned, beaten, and shot. Sunday, I had been slapped around and I had some teeth knocked out. On Monday, I got to go to the dentist, and, sadly, that had been the most relaxing time of the whole week. Tuesday had resulted in a van wreck and road rash, and I had gotten my ass kicked last night by, first, a vampire, and then used by Franks as a punching bag. Who knew what today would bring? Interestingly enough, the full moon was going to be Friday night, exactly 1 week from when this all started. It had an interesting sort of symmetry to it, or it probably would if I lived to enjoy it. A week ago I had been ready to quit, scared that I was doing the wrong thing, scared by the violence that I kept leashed up inside. But those things, that darkness, it was what had kept many of us alive over the last few days. My pursuit of a regular life was a lie. I could see that now. My place was here. I was a monster hunter. By the time we flew over Hainville, I was asleep. I saw the mysterious tattooed man. He was driving a car down the nearly empty freeway. The person sitting next to him had been the vehicle's previous owner, neck snapped like a twig when the tattooed man had decided he needed transportation. His bare foot was on the gas, and he kept it just under the speed limit to avoid attention. Black eyes stared straight ahead, fixed in the direction of his target. He drummed his fingers absently on the wheel. He was close. Very close. The anticipation of regaining his charge was great, and the excitement of approaching battle was building in his ancient soul. He knew I was watching him, He was close enough now for that. The tattoos on his face withered as he spoke, knowing all too well that I could hear him despite the barriers of space and time. His archaic form of speech was thick and accented.
"I care not about thy war. The artifact is mine to protect, and do so I shall."
"Who are you?" I thought.
"Look upon me and see thy doom, cursed man. Thou shalt die by my hand."
"Why?" He paused, the unnatural ink swirling around his blunt features. He seemed surprised by my question.
"Thou knowest not?"
"No."
"Thou knowest not of thy fate? Of thy place in this world?"
"Nope." He laughed at me, a booming, hearty laugh. It was without real emotion, as any human feelings that had once inhabited this hardened creature had passed a long time ago. Rather, the laughter was an ingrained reflex at hearing something so seemingly preposterous.
"Surely thou hast some knowledge."
"No. I'm getting pretty sick of this myself."
"Then I shall be saddened to take the life of a warrior whose heart is without guile. Alas, it must be. For that, I am sorry. But thou must surely die by my hand. I shall do my best to make it swift and glorious."
"I don't want to fight you."
"Thou hast no choice," he stated flatly. "'Tis my duty."
I had my fill of people and monsters threatening to kill me.
"Bring it on, bitch."
His face cracked into a wide grin. The swirling markings formed a sympathetic jaw around his lips.
"Ah, there be the spirit. We shall wage us a fine battle."
He continued driving as my spirit lifted from the moving vehicle. The sun was rising on the freeway behind us. I recognized the city in the background. Montgomery. The dream world.
"Hello, boy,"
the old man greeted me as I approached the destroyed church.
"Hurry, hurry! Time is much short. Cut off last time."
He looked agitated, limping toward me, using his cane as support in the light but slick snow.
"Mordecai, who the hell was that joker?"
I asked as I stepped over some rubble and scattered bricks. Either I had not noticed before, or perhaps the old man had not put them there before, but there were thousands of shell casings scattered on the ground or pocked into the snow.
"Who?"
he asked, perplexed.
"That big tattoo-faced guy. The guardian of the artifact, or whatever."
He hurried over, his face drawn into a look of concern.
"You spoke to this man?"
"Yeah, just now. Didn't you see?"
"No."
He shook his head, his Star of David bouncing wildly off his thin chest.
"He's here? Now?"
The old man sounded very worried.
"I think so. I think he's in Montgomery."
"He's bad. Much, much bad."
"He said he has to kill me."
"Afraid of this I was. Listen to me, boy. You are brave and strong, but no match for him. If he comes, run."
"So let me get this straight. You've got no problem with me taking on the Cursed One and 7 master vampires and gargoyles and wights and who knows what else, but you want me to turn and run if I see this tattoo-faced, funny-talking freak?"
"Yes."
He shook his head happily.
"Glad you understand, boy. Now come, time is short, and still much you have to see. I will do what I can, but I not know if I have time enough."
"Why is he so dangerous? How can he be any more dangerous than Lord Machado?"
The old man put his hands alongside my head.
"Not him who is dangerous. I worry about you who is dangerous."
"Huh?"
He squeezed my head and looked me in the eyes. I think he was trying to convey the seriousness of his advice.
Never mind. See him? Run away. Not strong enough to face. Bad things happen. Now shush. Much memory to show before fight.
The dream world faded away. Lord Machado's memory was sharp and refined for this night, etched deeply into his mind. This pyramid was much larger than the others, but had been partially buried by earthquakes and mudslides in the distant past, and then mostly reclaimed by the jungle. The stones were crumbling with age, and the once intricate carvings were weathered to the point that they were no longer clearly recognizable. Now the pictures looked more like squid and crab things going about their business than the pictorial people that they must have been at one time. The remaining architecture seemed unfamiliar and somehow alien. Many months had passed while the priestess had instructed me in her dark arts. I had learned much and seen things not meant for human eyes. I had communed with dark forces, and my education had continued until finally I felt ready to unleash the power. The time had come for me to reclaim my birthright and fulfill the prophecy. I was ready. The priestess Corinna was at my side. A small contingent of her selected priests led the way up the steps. A squadron of my most trusted and loyal soldiers remained to guard the base of the pyramid. The priestess leaned in close and spoke softly into my ear.
"Your men are scared, Lord Machado."
"They do not understand what we do, but they are loyal. They will do as they are told. They would follow me into the very pit itself if ordered, for I am their general, and they know their place."
"That is good, but not all of your soldiers are so loyal. There has been no word of your chief captain."
She sounded mildly worried. "We cannot afford an interruption during the sacrifice. The old ones would be offended." She was right to be concerned. A small group of men, led by one of my best captains, had disappeared, most likely deserted. The giant of a man, called Thrall, had hired onto the expedition as a mercenary. He was from some small country to the northeast, and had barely even spoken our language at the time of our embarkation, but he had proven himself to be a fierce warrior, whom the men would follow without hesitation. I had been reluctant to promote him, but he was far too capable to have been wasted as a mere musketeer. Unfortunately, his primitive upbringing had made my own superstitious men seem like philosophers in comparison. He had been against my initial conscription of the native forces, and he had been adamantly opposed to staying in the city rather than sacking and burning it to the ground. I had my suspicions that he had been in league with the now-departed Friar de Sousa as well. The divinations of the priestess had confirmed his treachery, and the fact that he had been a holy man amongst his forgotten people. Doubtless my consorting with dark forces had driven him away. It would not matter, even if the captain had fled for the sea. By the time he would be able to send a message of my treachery back to agents of the crown, it would be too late. My powers would be granted tonight. "No need to worry, my love. The good captain is no threat to us." I had dispatched a force of soldiers and conscripts to chase the deserters down and execute them. "It is under control."
"Excellent, my lord. But should it prove necessary, I summoned some protectors for our ceremony tonight."
The top of the ancient structure was flat, except for a single raised dais. The altar had a funnel protruding from its base, giving some clue to its dark history. Giant braziers of flaming coals had been placed on the corners, illuminating us with flickering light. The pagan priests went immediately to their respective stations. Large stone demons squatted around the altar. One of the carved statues turned its head and regarded us with blank, stone eyes.
Dust shook from it as unnaturally long arms flexed non-existent muscles. It was a mighty beast.
"What manner of creature is that?"
I hissed.
"They are here to protect you, Lord Mashado. Once you unlock the power of the Old Ones, you will be able to create these animations as you see fit."
The stone creature turned away, satisfied that I was its new master. I could only imagine the army that I could command with creatures constructed from the rocks of the earth itself. A small group of the feather-robed men were already waiting before the altar. They stood aside and kneeled as we approached. One of the priests said something in his language to the priestess.
"The sacrifice is ready, Lord," she told me.
A young man was stretched upon the altar, his wrists and ankles bound with heavy cords. Rather than fearful, the man appeared defiant. He said something in their strange language. I could tell he was cursing me.
"He is a hunter of the Iwapanoma of the jungle and the Ahuzoitl of the rivers, a protector of the innocent, and a great warrior. The Old Ones demand such a sacrifice."
"What do I need to do?"
I ran my finger down the worn wood shaft of my axe. I would show this hunter of monsters what I thought of his curses. "Are you ready, my lord of the axe? Are you prepared to be a vessel for the very power of the ancients?"
"I am ready to take my rightful place as ruler of this world."
She looked deep into my eyes. The world condensed down to just the two of us, shutting out the chanting priests, the cursing and spitting hunter, and the screaming of the jungle.
"You are he who has been prophesied. Warrior, son of a great warrior, your very name taken from the weapons that have shed the blood of your family's enemies, sent by a king on an impossible quest, a leader, a visionary, an ally of darkness."
She stroked my cheek as I recalled the prophecy of the black obelisk.
"And of monsters."
She gestured at the hulking demon figure standing guard over us.
"Truly you are the one. 500 years since the last, 500 years until the next, the only one amongst 1,000 generations of man with the key to unlock the power over time. There is but one more thing."
"What is that?"
"The Old One said you must have love."
She pulled herself tight against my armor, like a parasite or a barnacle upon the hull of a ship. She needed me more than I needed her now.
"Tell me, my lord, is it so?"
"Of course," I answered truthfully. I loved her as much as a practical man such as myself could love anything. I had found in the dark priestess an equal in ambition, desire, and lust for control. If the Old Ones required a weak emotion to unlock the secrets of ultimate power, I could think of worse choices than the wanton, evil creature before me.
"If I were to die, would you return for me? Would you bring me back from the other side?"
she implored.
"You alone will have the power, but you will need my guidance to use it."
Of course. That was her key to staying in my graces. The Old Ones had not revealed their secrets to me like they had to her. They only saw fit to give me a glimpse into the darkness and a taste of their unimaginable dominations. I needed her guidance. "I give you my word, Corinna. I shall not allow you to perish so long as I live. And with this," I pulled the bag from my waist, "should you die, I shall bring you back." The priestess laughed again. It was the shrill cry of a harpy.
"Then let us begin the ceremony, my lord."
The priests and sorcerers formed a chain around the altar, leaving Corinaha, the bound hunter, and myself in the center. I was directed to remove the artifact from its bag and place it upon the stones. A burst of cold traveled up my arm as my gauntlet closed around the small rectangular box. It did not reflect the moonlight. Rather, it seemed to absorb it hungrily, leaving a greater darkness than was possible. For the first time, markings could be seen on the black surface. They began to glow and gain in strength, withering tendrils, seemingly alive and searching. I placed the box near the head of the trapped hunter. He shouted and spat at me, but his words were drowned out by the increasing hum of the chanting priests. The coldness in my arm did not dissipate, but began to travel deeper into my core, chilling my blood and forming crystals of ice vapor in my lungs. The priestess studied the moon.
"The time is upon us. I must call upon the old ones in their speech. When I am done, remove the heart of the sacrifice. Drink some of his blood and pour the rest upon the artifact."
I pulled my battle axe from my back, released the leather cover from the ancient sharpened head, and cast it aside. The shaft was smooth and polished with use, strengthened with bands of iron that had been replaced countless times over generations. The blade itself was ancient, made of an unknown metal that cut like the finest steel, yet had somehow survived in the possession of my family since the time of Alexander. It had taken many lives, and the sacrifice tonight would be but another, though it had never been used in so dark a pagan ritual. For me there would be no reconciliation. There would be no forgiveness. After tonight there was no looking back or turning away from the dark path I trod. My people, my country, and my God would all forsake me for the acts I was about to commit. So be it. I twisted the deadly weapon in my gauntleted fists. I am ready. The priestess began to speak, her voice low and guttural, descending somehow into tones not produced by human beings, and in pitches never meant to be heard by mortal ears. Swirling black clouds drew over the pyramid, moving at speeds greater than the greatest storms of the seas. Lightning cracked down into the surrounding jungle. Thunder boomed and echoed off of the mountains, deafening in its fury. Raindrops the size of babies' fists pelted down upon us in an intense deluge. Within moments, the pyramid was drenched, and torrents of water spilled down the causeways and stairs. The memory became disjointed, and the foundations of the world cracked.
"You'll not listen to this,"
the old man whispered.
"Why?" "It's for best. Not to have such things in head. Drive you mad."
The memory flashed by impossibly fast. The ceremony continued. The priests gave dark signs. The priestess continued her impossible litany. Time returned to normal.
"Better. Now worms not eat your brain when wake up.
Now take his heart and feast upon his blood,"
the priestess screamed over the roar of the wind and rain. The artifact was floating now, inches above the stone. It was absorbing all of the available light, seeming to surge and gorge itself with every continuous lightning strike. The etchings on the artifact had detached themselves and were swirling in the air, growing and spinning, crackling with black energy. The hunter met my eyes. He was beyond fear and prepared for his death. I brought the weapon down on the center of his chest, severing the muscles and cracking the sternum. I stopped before it pierced his heart. I could use my axe with surgical precision. He screamed in agony. I twisted and levered the blade in, using the handle as a pry bar. I shattered the ribs and pulled the axe free. He was still alive as I reached into the cavity, pushed through the remaining flesh and welling fluids, and grasped his beating heart with my gauntlet. It pulsed as I curled my fist around the organ and tugged. The hunter screamed and spasmed as I tore the heart free.
"Drink," the priestess commanded.
"No!"
I tore myself free of the vision.
"You must watch," the old man insisted. "You must learn."
"Not that part. Hell no."
"Good boy. Hope for you yet."
I tossed the still warm heart aside. My mouth tasted coppery, and my stomach roiled against the unfamiliar sensations. The fluids that I had poured into the artifact had seemingly disappeared, swallowed up and taken to another, darker place. The artifact was spinning now, the black lines of power twirling around like streamers, twisting with the physical presence of snakes.
"There is only one thing left, my lord," the priestess said, "and the power over time itself is yours."
"Tell me what I must do!"
I raged into the storm. I was so close. The booming of the thunder continued, but my battle-hardened senses picked up another sound, the explosions of gunpowder.
"You must take the final—"
She stopped, glancing down in surprise. Corinna reached one delicate hand between her breasts and probed with her fingers. Her hand came away from the hole as a trickle of blood ran down her rain-soaked robes. I turned in time to see the armored figures appearing over the lip of the pyramid. Most of their matchlocks misfired as the fierce rain soaked their powder or extinguished their smoking cords, so they used them as clubs. Captain Thrall led the charge. His sword cleaved downward and tore one of the priests in half. Behind him were all of his men, and I was surprised to see many of the men that I had sent in pursuit of the deserters. Even my most loyal troops that I had left to guard the pyramid had turned against me. The demons rose and lumbered into the fray, swatting aside the conquistadors with heavy stone limbs. The scene degenerated into a mob of confusion as rain fell and lightning flashed. The artifact still spun in its web of black tendrils.
"Corinna!"
I shouted as the priestess fell to her knees, vomiting blood from her open mouth. I knelt at her side and caught her before she went face down to the stone. I shook her.
"What now? Tell me!"
"My love, bring me back."
She foamed at the mouth and died. Her eyes rolled sightlessly back into her head.
"No! No! Damn you! Damn you all!"
I screamed as I dropped her soulless form into the rushing water. My plans were ruined. Without the priestess, I did not know how to commune with the old ones. All of my treachery, throwing away my command, throwing away my generalship, all for naught. I howled in rage and hatred. I had to reach the artifact. Now the memory shifts, flailing forward in jerks and spurts.
"Stop him! Kill the general!"
bellowed Captain Thrall. He was locked in battle against one of the fearsome demons. With his great strength, he sent it tumbling backward over the pyramid's edge.
"Kill him!"
the brute screamed in a berserk rage. Soldiers moved to block me. I killed one of Corinna's priests that stumbled blindly into my path. I waded into the troops, axe humming through the giant water droplets. The troops fell back under the fury of my onslaught. My skin was like ice, and my blade moved as quickly as the lightning. I could feel the power of the artifact. So close. So very close. I crushed a soldier's skull and batted him aside.
A sword tip streaked across my armor as I stepped clear and hammered the man to the earth. I wrenched out my axe blade, dripping with blood.